ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Well, first of all, we can say a little bit about Srila Lochan Das Thakur because today is the disappearance anniversary, Tirobhava Mohotsava, of Srila Lochan Das Thakur. Srila Lochan Das Thakur was born in Bengal in the village called Kogram in 1520. And he was a natural musician, very good singer. His spiritual master was Srila Narahari Sarkar Thakur, one of the earliest poets to compose Gaudiya Vaishnava poetry in the vernacular. As a matter of fact, there were some poets here in Vrindavan who wrote verses about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Brajbhasha language, and they are considered to be Gaudiya Vaishnavas also. But they have no mention in Bhakti Ratnakar and in other Chaitanya Charitamrita and other standard hagiographies of our line. And so we don't need to focus on what they had to say. But at any rate, it's an interesting thing because Srila Narahari Das Thakur and also his disciple Srila Lochan Das Thakur, they would appear to have subscribed to this Gauranga Nagarivad, which at that time in Bengal was the popular idea, that in their poetry, some Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they wrote about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as if he were also the enjoyer of the gopis. And in our line, we don't accept this. And so it's an interesting thing. It's a problem that we have to deal with. Srila Prabhupada was very fond of singing Lochan Das Thakur's songs. With several of them, Prabhupada mentions him, quotes him regularly, and says that he was also one of the great Vaishnava Padakartas, the composers of Vaishnava lyrics. So I don't really know how to resolve that, but at any rate, there's one song that Srila Prabhupada used to sing and was very fond of and is very purifying for us to hear. Parama karuna pahu dvijan nitai gaura chandra. That you will not find anyone more merciful than these two personalities, Nitai and Gaura Chandra. This was his idea. And then he says, Shababatar Shara Shiromani Kebal Ananda Kanda. Because their process, what they're teaching us, is only bliss. It's like Srila Prabhupada also said, Krishna consciousness is only recreation. And a disciple told Srila Prabhupada, well, Srila Prabhupada, we have to do a little work also sometimes. And Prabhupada said, no, only recreation. Because we're chanting, we're dancing, we're taking prasadam, we're discussing Krishna katha. These things are all nectarian. Actually, if you think about what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, machitta madgata prana bodhayanta parasparam kathayantascha ma nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. It means that devotees are constantly enjoying, nourishing one another, being nourished by one another, and delighting in this practice of talking about Krishna, dancing and chanting, philosophy, feasting, etc. Goloka Vrindavan activity. The more that we can replicate in our lives and in this world, the activities that we see going on here in Sridham Vrindavan, then that's the perfection of Krishna consciousness. So this is called Keval Ananda Kanda in simple Bengali language of Lochan Das Thakur. And then he says the process to do this is to simply give up sense gratification. Although it's so easy thing to do, there is a condition that you have to give up sense gratification. Vishaya charya shera shema jiya mukhe bolo hari hari. Chant Hare Krishna. I think it was Hayagriva who came to Srila Prabhupada one day and said that he was having problems controlling lust. And Prabhupada said, well, when this thing attacks you, then you simply chant Hare Krishna. And Hayagriva offered Srila Prabhupada and countered Srila Prabhupada that, well, Prabhupada, we are chanting. And Prabhupada said, no, you don't chant. That's the problem. So it's actually a fact. If we understand the ramifications of the instruction Kirtaniya Sadahari, that we're only to chant Krishna Kirtan all the time, then we realize that actually we're not really doing that much. We're not really chanting. And that's why we have problems. So, Vishaya Charya Sherashe Majya Mukhe Bolo Hari Hari. Then he says, Dekho Re Bhai Tribhuvane Nai Amandoyala Data. You will not find anyone who's more merciful than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and especially Nityananda Prabhu in this whole world. If you look, go ahead and try. Dear brother, you will not find anyone more merciful than these two in giving out something that's very valuable for free. It's kind of like in the Srimad Bhagavatam we have this verse, Kam va dayalam sharanam vrajema? To whom shall I go who is more merciful than Krishna? Because Putana came to kill Krishna. She had smeared her breast with poison only for the purpose of killing him. And yet Krishna didn't take it like that. He thought, oh, she's coming and giving me her breast milk. She wants to be my mata. And so he gave her that position in the spiritual world, they say. So this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. He's just giving out Krishna Prema. Namo Mahavaranyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurav Tushe Nama. Rup Goswami has glorified him like that. So then he says, Dakore bhai tripodene amandayal data pashu pakhi jure pakhana vidare shuni jar guna gatha. Just by hearing his transcendental qualities and just by hearing the kirtan of Gaura Kirtan, then even a stone-hearted person can melt. Even a stone-hearted person can melt. So if we give our ears submissively to this process, then we can be purified in this way. Sangsare majiya rohile pariya shepade nahilo asha. But I'm in a hopeless condition, Lochandas Thakur says, because I've fallen into this muck of material existence and I don't see any way to get myself out. Apane karma bhunjaye shaman. I just have to eat my karma. Karma. Bhunjatma evam atma kritam vipakam. As it's said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, what you have cooked, that you have to eat. So we've all cooked up this karma for ourselves, whatever situation we find ourselves in, it's something that we've cooked. And now we have to eat. So, just like in Hindi, you eat everything, right? Hawa khana, mar khana, right? Cigarette pipina. You eat and drink everything in Hindi. So, similarly, in Sanskrit also, this idea, you have to eat your own karma, whatever you've done. So he says, this is my unfortunate condition, I don't know what to do, but Prabhupada translates, Yamaraj, I think, is punishing me by not allowing me to take full part, participate wholly in this Sankirtana movement. So this is Lochandas Thakur. Kohaya Lochandas. He's expressed his wonderful Krishna conscious sentiments in this way. And by hearing this song in particular, Srila Prabhupada used to sing it himself, even in ecstasy. There's one occasion in Atlanta, Georgia, I think it was, that Srila Prabhupada was singing this song and just went into ecstasy, just began to cry at the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Parama karuna pahon dvijan nitai gaura chandra. If any of us has any hope of actually entering into this realm of Krishna consciousness, particularly here in Vrindavan Dham, it's only by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and nothing else. Only that can sustain us. We sing three times a day, those who are twice initiated, that he's maintaining the whole universe by this process of mercy only. And as if chasing us, the acharyas have commented on the 11th canto. Maya mrigam dayita yepsitam anuvadhavat. He's as if chasing us down in this material world, those of us who are completely inebriated and enamored by all the toys of Maya in this material world. He's running after us to pull us back by the sikha, as Prabhupada said. If you chant the name of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda, and then chant Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare, and do not forget the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then he will take us. He will take you back to Godhead. Whatever it takes, he will not forget you. So, Lochan Das Thakur was a great Vaishnava devotee. As I mentioned earlier, he and his guru, they were both great poets and great musicians, and they were very much influential in the early days of Krishna consciousness, in Bengal in particular. And his songs are still remembered even today, 500 years later. So we can humbly bow at his lotus feet today, pray for his mercy. Does anybody have any questions or comments about Lochan Das Thakur or anything that we've said so far? Yes, please. He's asking someone to confirm whether it was Lochan Das Thakur who wrote the song Jaya Nilo Prema Dhana. Narottam Das Thakur should be. Yeah. Did Lochan Das Thakur have disciples? I'm actually not aware of that. I know his guru was Narahari Sarkar. Narahari Sarkar Thakur is also a great devotee, wrote a famous book called Krishna Bhajanamrita, gives some valuable instructions how to worship Krishna. So we can't necessarily understand everything that these personalities have written, and we certainly cannot imitate them, but we humbly bow at their feet and beg for their mercy, particularly Lochan Das Thakur today. Now, if we have a Srimad Bhagavatam, yeah, here. So I was asked to speak on verse 25 today, so I'm going to do that. And 25, the text is Dvavamau anushochanti balau sad avagraha yalloka shastro panatam narati tad natat icchati. That means, it's a very nice verse, one who does not give charity according to the customs or injunctions of the scriptures, and one who does not accept charity in that way, are considered to be in the mode of ignorance. Such persons follow the path of the foolish. Surely they must lament at the end. And Srila Prabhupada has written here in his purport, it is herein stated that one should strictly follow the scriptures if one actually wants an auspicious life. The same is explained in Bhagavad Gita 16:23. Yashastravidham utsridjya vartate kama karataha nasa siddhim avapnoti nasukham naparam gatim. He who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims attains neither perfection nor happiness, nor the supreme destination. One who does not strictly follow the terms of the Vedic injunctions never attains success in life or happiness. And what to speak of going home back to Godhead. So that's one thing. And then the second paragraph says, one shastric injunction holds that a householder, a kshatriya, or an administrative head should not refuse to accept a woman if she voluntarily requests to become a wife. Since Kalakanya, the daughter of time, was deputed by Narad Muni to offer herself to Yavanaraj, the king of the Yavanas could not refuse her. All transactions must be performed in light of the Shastric injunctions. The Shastric injunctions are confirmed by great sages like Narad Muni. As stated by Narottam Das Thakur, Sadhu Shastra Guru Bhakka Chitte Te Koriya Aikka, one should follow the principles of saintly persons, scriptures, and the spiritual master. In this way, one is sure to attain success in life. Kalakanya, the daughter of time, presented herself before the king of the Yavanas precisely in terms of sadhu, shastra, and guru. Thus, there was no reason for not accepting her. Dvavimau anushochanti balavasad avagrahau yalloka shastropanatam narati natad ichati. One who does not give charity according to the customs or injunctions of the scriptures, and one who does not accept charity in that way, are considered to be in the mode of ignorance. Such persons follow the path of the foolish. Surely they must lament at the end. This is a very interesting idea. There's a few things that we can say here first. First of all, this Kalakanya, who is Kalakanya again? What is her identity, Kalakanya? Daughter of time, what does that mean? What is she or who is she? She's old age, Jara. Nobody wants to marry old age. But she had to marry someone, and so she went to Narad Muni. Narad Muni refused because he was a brahmachari. One time I remember, well, we can say, when devotees perform sankirtana, Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram, Shri Shri Garnita, Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundara, Shri Lalita Vishakha Devi Ki Jai. Devotees who perform sankirtana, they're given very special mercy by Krishna. And sometimes that mercy comes in the form of experiences that one has while on sankirtana. One time when I was a brahmachari, upakulvana brahmachari, there are two kinds of brahmacharis. Naishtiki brahmachari means he's determined not to marry at any time. And upakulvana brahmachari means he's brahmachari now, but he'll probably be married later on. So one time in 1976, I was a brahmachari on sankirtana. And I was distributing Srila Prabhupada's books and collecting donations in Louisville, Kentucky, in the United States, of all the godforsaken places that one might find himself. Home of Colonel Sanders, KFC. I don't think you have that here, but maybe you do have it here. It's interesting, I've seen a third world phenomenon, that this trash, what we call frankenfood or junk food in America, nobody goes there. These things are highly touted in third world countries, and they're highly valued, and in fact it seems to be a sort of a prestigious thing to go and patronize such abominable institutions. Anyway, one time I met this fellow on sankirtana, Colonel Sanders. But he didn't give a donation. No, he gave a donation. He gave one silver dollar. And he didn't take, he was not interested in Back to Godhead magazine, which I tried to inspire him to take. He didn't want it. too sinful, I suppose. But anyway, that's not the point that I'm, that's not the story I'm telling here. I was distributing books in Louisville, Kentucky, and I was all of 16 or 17 years old. And I had given one woman a Back to Godhead magazine, not woman, a young girl, had given her a Back to Godhead magazine, and she was very interested, or so it seemed. And then when I asked her for a donation, she said, well, I don't have any money. I mean, all I can give is myself. Of course, when you're 17, this is a problem. But anyway, it just, this anecdote here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it kind of reminded me of that situation, because the Shastric injunction is that if you are a householder, or if you are a kshatriya, or an administrative head, then you cannot refuse a woman who approaches you. That is to say, if you're a big king, it doesn't mean that you're a fool who wants to engage in illicit sex. That's a different matter. But that is a kind of Shastric injunction, and the principle should be understood. The principle is that even if it's appealing or even if it's not appealing, it doesn't make any difference. One has to surrender. Now, the word here is used in the verse, the last final line of the verse. I'm sorry it's not written on the board. It would be edifying. But narati natad ichhati. Narati, rati. The word rati, it's a verb, second class verb. And it means, among other things, it means to grant or to bestow or to confer upon someone. That's one meaning. It also means to impart, or Prabhupada has translated in sixth canto, to administer, just like a physician administers medicine, to impart something or to endorse, we can say, by extension. That's also what it means. And it also means to yield or to surrender to something. So here the idea is, narati natad ichhati. He neither wants to endorse the Shastric injunction, neither he wants to follow the Shastric injunction. That person, she's telling him now, this is her line, anushochanti. Such person, there are two classes of persons, dvauhimau, anushochanti. They're both like children. They're both very immature, she's saying. And one is the person who doesn't want to accept the Shastric injunction, and the other person is the person who he may follow, but only for the sake of what we call niyamagraha, for the sake of following, but not in principle, not in spirit. And therefore, he certainly doesn't preach. This is the idea. He doesn't endorse or impart these instructions to others. Yaloka shastropanatam. Now, upanatam means actually to bow down to what the Shastra is humbly submitting for us. It also means, by extension, what the Shastra is enjoining for us to do. What the Shastra is offering us, we can say. Yaloka shastropanatam narati natarichati. A person who neither follows nor desires or to endorse these things. That person is like a foolish child, because asad avagraha, he has accepted instead something which is unreal. And therefore, anushochanti, he's going to cry. Sooner or later, he's going to lament and find himself in a difficult circumstance. Now, Sri Goswami has elucidated this for us. He says, lokato vedatascha yad, dayadvena grahyadvena chopanatam praptam, tad yachimanam no yadadati yascha dhyamanam nechati na grhnati imao dvau karma bhutao anushochanti santaha. The person who laments is, as I've explained already, these person who has done one of these two things or both of them. Now, it's interesting because some of the commentators who have explained this verse, they bring up a similar quote from the third canto. When Swayambhuva Manu wanted to marry his daughter to Kardama Muni, who was his daughter that married Kardama Muni? Devahuti, very highly qualified girl. And Kardama Muni also was, I guess you can say, an Upakulavana Brahmachari. He was interested in getting married. So the verse is, Yo udyatam anadritya kinasham abhidhiyate kshiyate tadyashahaspitam manash chavagnyahata. That is to say that one who rejects a gift or an offering that comes of its own accord, but later begs a boon from a miser, thus loses his widespread reputation, and his pride is humbled by the neglectful behavior of others. So Swayambhuva Manu was reminding Kardama Muni that, you know, I'm giving you a very nice girl for a wife, and if you don't accept her now, then you may be in a problem later when you actually want to find someone. So this is an interesting idea. But the principle is very clear, according to what Sridhar Swami has explained here, that one has to accept in charity. If someone is offering charity, I remember when I was in college, we were translating some Buddhist sutra, and there the idea was explained in Buddhism that the person who gives a, the monks who receive a gift from a lay person, they have to use that thing. Otherwise, the person who has given the gift will not get the benefit of having given it. This is their principle. I mean, I don't know how it applies here, but the idea is that one should, particularly the brahmanas, they have six duties, as we know. What are those six duties of the brahmanas? Yajan, yajan. He worships and he engages others in worship. Patan, pahan. He studies and he teaches. And then, dana pratigraha. And that's what we're talking about today. Dana means he has to give in charity. Pratigraha means he has to accept charity. It's an injunction. And with injunction, there's no choice. It's not an option. There are different kinds of karmas that are enjoined in the Shastra. There's niyatam karma, which means you have to do it all the time, every day. And then there's naimittika karma, which means you do it periodically. Just like when you have, when your children are given the hair cutting ceremony, that's a naimittika samskaram. It doesn't happen every day, you just once in a lifetime. Marriage also, samskars, they're like that. So, anyway, it's a general injunction that a Brahmin should accept charity. And here it said, the Prabhupada is bringing up this injunction, that for a king, for an administrative head, for a householder of means, we can assume, if a woman offers herself, then he has to accept her. So this is what her argument is. She's reminding him that if you refuse this gift, which is coming free of its own accord, then you may find yourself in a problem later on. That's the idea behind this verse, which they quote from the third canto. Now, there's another thing here. Yalloka shastropurnatam. There are two things. One is loka, and the other one is shastra. What does loka mean? Loka. Planet, that's one meaning. Loka means society. Yes, very good. The society, the civilization, the people in general, the population, that's called loka also. So loka is one mode of, or, you know, we can say popular convention is one mode of dharma that one has to respect here. This is the implication. And of course, shastropanatam as well. Whatever the shastra has explicitly said, then that for sure you have to follow it. Now, in the 11th canto, we find a very interesting verse. How many pramanas do we have in Krishna consciousness? Pramana means how many evidences do we use to weigh the validity of some proposition that is made when we're discussing spiritual advancement. How many pramanas do we use? Huh? Some say 10. Anybody who agrees with that, raise your hand. One agrees. We generally talk about three pramanas, is it not? What are they? Shabda, pratyaksha, Anumana. Shabda means to hear from an authority, an authoritative assertion. That's called shabda. And pratyaksha means to whatever you can perceive or grab with your senses. Pratyaksha means it's in front of your eyes. Seeing is believing. And then there's anumana, which means you use your mind to try to extrapolate what could be, to speculate. These are the three things, and they're not of equal importance, according to Jiva Goswami. The Shastra has, the Shabda has the preeminent position, and the others are only valuable to the extent that they support the conclusions of the Shabda. That's a very important point, because it's what Krishna has said here in the verse that Prabhupada has quoted, and several other acharyas have also quoted that same verse from Bhagavad Gita chapter 16, text 23. Yas Shastra Vidhim Utsrijya Vartate Kamakarata Nasa Siddhim Avapnoti Nasa Kam Na Paramgatim. If a person discards what the Shastra says or what the Shabda says and Kamakarata for the purpose of fulfilling his own desire only, he acts in that way, then it said he cannot even be successful in this world. Two or three times Prabhupada has pointed this out in his purport. He can't even be successful in life, what to speak of afterlife. Na sukham na param gatim. Certainly he doesn't go back to Godhead. A very, very important point. But that's not the only thing. And this is what I'm saying. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 19, text 17, there's a very interesting verse, which gives not three pramanas, but four pramanas. What's the fourth one? Anybody know that verse? I'll read it to you. Shruti pratyaksham aitihyam anumanam chatushtayam. The four evidences, Krishna says. He's talking to Uddhava here. He says the four evidences that one uses are the shruti, that means shabda, hearing from the Vedas in particular, or anything that, any authority that follows the Vedas. Shruti. Pratyaksha, we know, that's sense perception, obviously. Some things are valid by sense perception. If you take prasadam and you like it, you don't have to ask anyone else. Pratyaksha is enough for that. Right? Then aitihyam. What does aitihyam mean? Anybody know? Iti here. Huh? Tradition. Very good. Itihasa, we can say. Or as they say in the legal world, traditional, what is it? Legal precedent, we might say. Cases that have gone in the past, similar, you know, like this. So this is where the word loka is important. We have the two things, remember, we're explaining. Ya loka shastra upanatam. It's loka upanatam or it's shastra upanatam. They're both important. So if the shabda is not clear, if pratyaksha cannot clarify that, and if anuman is not consistent, everybody has their own opinion, then what? To whom do you go? Kamva dayalam sharanam. Where will you go to clarify the question? Aitihyam. Historical convention, traditional convention. This is a very important point. And it's being referred to here in the verse itself and also by the acharyas commenting on it. So scripture can also be understood. This is why when Prabhupada quotes here Narottam Das Thakur, Guru Sadhu Shastra Vakka Chite Te Kodya Aika. When we speak about the sadhus, we don't just speak about our friends. Who may be devotees. We also speak about the entire tradition of sadhus who have gone before us. All the acharyas in our line especially, but also in general. We can learn something from anyone, but we cannot learn everything from anyone. This is an important point. You can always learn something from just anyone at all. But you can not necessarily learn everything from just anyone at all. It's a very important point. So even if Prabhupada is quoting, therefore, in his book, sometimes he quotes Shakespeare. Sometimes Prabhupada will quote, I mean, anyone. To make the point, you can appreciate that there has been a precedent there. So that's a very important thing as well. Now, the important point here is, as we find in the end of chapter 16, from text 23 onwards, Krishna is mentioning a few things that are very important. I'll read a couple of the verses just to show you. He says, for example, after quoting this verse, Tasmat chastram pramanam te karya karya vavasthetao. You should understand what to do and what not to do on the basis of what the Shastra says to do. Shastra conjunction, in other words. Nadva Shastra vidhanoktam karma kartumi harhasi. You should do your work in that light. That's why it's not necessarily... Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let me explain, first of all, something more. When Krishna, in the same passage, says... When one is freed from these three enemies, what three enemies is he talking about at the end of chapter 16? Kama, krodha, lobha. Lust, anger, and greed. They can be counteracted by sacrifice, by charity, by austerity. Today we're talking about charity in particular. It can counteract greed. Giving charity. It purifies the heart. This is the common denominator that we find within any Shastra conjunction. The common denominator is that there's an element of sacrifice, charity, or austerity that purifies the heart to some degree. And depending on that purification of one's existence, one gets purified, relatively speaking. If it's a very strong evidence, one gets very purified by following it. If it's a very weak karma or gyan mixed or yoga mixed injunction, then one gets some purification still, but not as much. Now, in the beginning of the chapter 16, we're talking about chapter 16 in Bhagavad Gita deals with what? Two things. Divine nature and the demoniac nature, and Krishna emphasizes the demoniac nature as if presupposing what's relevant for most of us. So Krishna says in the beginning, what are some of the divine qualities? The second thing he mentions, abhayam sattva samshuddhi. Sattva samshuddhi. Sattva samshuddhi, what does it mean? Sattva samshuddhi. It doesn't mean to be pure and situated in the mode of goodness. Sattva in this case means to your existence, to purify your existence. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has defined that in his commentary as chitta prasada, to be in a state of grace, as the Christians say. Or chitta prasada, to be in prasanna manasa, Bhagavatam also tells us, to be in happy, to be happy, to be pure. Bhadivadabhushan clarifies even further. He says, swashrama dharmanushthanena mano nirmalyam. To have a pure mind as a result of following your dharma. Following your dharma. This is what produces the purification of one's existence. So we're not talking about purification of your spiritual existence, because spiritual existence is eternally pure. We're talking about purifying the material existence. Purifying those things in which you want success in life, as we've already read. And how do we get success in life? By following the Shastra. If you have an argument, there are different ways that you can solve that argument. Let me read the second half of the verse now, because that tells us. Acharati atmanah shreyas tato yati paramgatim. If you want to go to the supreme destination, Krishna says, then acharati atmanah shreyas. You should perform in an exemplary manner those things which are conducive to your ultimate good. Atmanah shreyas. We know from the Upanishads, there are these two famous terms, shreyas and prayas. What does prayas mean? Prayas means that thing which is immediately appealing, but not necessarily that beneficial. Just like KFC, for example. I mean, nobody here has a problem with that, but there are people in this world, believe it or not, who are influenced enough by the modes of passion and ignorance that they find that attractive. So, that's maybe for them, that may be prayas. Now, shreyas, on the other hand, which means that which is super excellent, that which is preeminently valuable, but it may not be very appealing. It's quite often the case. Just like classical music. Everyone appreciates classical music, but to actually perform classical music, then you have to actually go through some austerity. And that's not very appealing in the beginning, especially for children. But you get the result after a long time of investing in austerity. Prabhupada said, there is no opulence in this world that does not have a long history of austerity behind it. Austerity or sacrifice or charity, as we've already mentioned. Shreyas is of this nature. It's difficult. It as Krishna says in chapter 17, or is it 18? He mentions happiness in the different modes of nature. Passionate happiness is very racy and appealing in the beginning, but it turns into poison later on. Sattvic happiness is the opposite. It's very repulsive in the beginning, but it becomes like nectar in the end. And when you're in tamoguna, you don't have happiness, period. It's only suffering from beginning to end. Anyway, so the idea here is that how do we define Shreya? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur defines it, astik yavataha eva shreya. Those things which are closer to God, that is Shreya. So if we have an argument, you can go to resolve, you can try to mediate, or you can approach a solution that you can adopt a solution that is more infused with godliness, unlike mediation. You can go to an authority. This is one example. In all aspects of life, there is a way to emphasize God. There is a way to emphasize spiritual consciousness. And there is a way to either neglect or to minimize it. This is the difference between Shreyas and Prayas. And when we talk of Shastric injunctions, because that's an emphatic point in this purport, yashastravitim utsrijya vartate kama karataha ityadi. Prabhupada and many of the acharyas are quoting this verse where Krishna says you have to emphasize the injunctions of the shastras in all your activities. In all your activities. That means the things that you do out of desire. It's called kamya karma. It means the things that you do every once in a while, like your marriage. And nowadays people get married every 6 months. I was talking with an American, and we were just kind of observing that in America, every 6 months a person has a different phone number and a different address and a different wife and a different guru and a different job. That's just the nature of passionate culture. Pseudo-culture, we can say. Anyway, the idea is that in everything that we do, and particularly those things that we do regularly, means every single day, just like when you nowadays when you want to look on the internet, you have to look at this picture of the honey bunny thing. They have got a big billboard out here on the Parikrama Marg. Several times a day you have to see that. What kind of samskar is that creating in your mind? What to speak of the Spice Girls across the street and chanting the way they do. Anyway. Therefore, the 11th canto also says that until one has really awakened a very deep taste for Krishna Katha, to the extent that one is no longer interested in anything else, as we mentioned in the beginning, kirtaniya sadaharihi, until that point one has to follow the Shastric injunctions, and the Shastric injunctions are custom tailored to produce sattva-guna, to bring you to the sattva-guna. And it does that through purification of the existence, purification of the mind especially, through charity, through sacrifice, austerity. So she's making an appeal to these principles here, particularly emphasizing charity, and she's reminding him that if you don't accept me on this basis, then you're going to suffer later on. So We'll see what happens. He's kind of in a hard place right now, this Yavanaraj. Old age personified now wants to surrender to him. When someone surrenders to you, we heard about this yesterday with regard to Jayadev Goswami. How do you reject? Very difficult. So we'll see what happens in the coming verses. But I'll stop here now. And anybody has any questions or comments, we can discuss. Is it clear, everything that I've said? Because there are some very subtle points.
You mentioned those things which counteract kama, kodha, lobha. What is a sacrifice, charity, austerity?
Yeah, in a general sense, I said sacrifice, charity, austerity. These are general characteristics that we find the Shastric injunctions are generally infused with, and they generally counteract not only lust, anger, and greed, but all of our ugly qualities. They help to purify the consciousness to some degree in a general way. There's no specific correlation each to each that I'm aware of. So the question is, what's the difference then between austerity and charity? Because it seems like both are a mode of sacrifice.
How are they different from sacrifice?
Yeah. Well, austerity is generally defined as accepting something that you don't want, whereas charity is giving up something that you do like or something that you do value. And of course, yeah, they're both sacrifice, but there are many other kinds of sacrifice as well. I mean, here we have this Yavanaraj, he may have to accept Kala Kanya as his wife. That may or may not be a pleasurable thing to accept or reject. But either way, whether it's pleasing or whether it's not pleasing, sacrifice means you surrender. Rati. You surrender to what the injunction says. This is the idea. If one does that, if one always bases his activities and his life or her life on what the Shastra enjoins, then that's the progressive path, and that person will be elevated because the consciousness will be purified. Okay? Anything else? No. In the back, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, it's actually the same idea. He's mentioning that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions twice, in fact, Shreyasya Dharma Viguna Paradharmat Sunushtitat, that it's better, it's more, Shreya in the sense better, Prabhupada has translated it there as better, but it means it's more elevating, it's more ennobling, it's more, it's super excellent, it's preeminently valuable, worthwhile. And in one's own interest, this is the point, Atmanah Shreya. It's in one's own interest to follow his own dharma as opposed to following someone else's dharma. That's a very important point, which is also further elaborated in the 11th canto when Krishna tells Uddhava there that Sve Sveadhikare Ya Nishtha Saguna Parikirtataha. That is to say that to do that thing which you are actually have the qualification to do without attempting more than you're qualified to do and without settling for less than you're qualified to do. To be right on the money with regards to your own adhikar, that is called guna, and to do anything other than that is called dosha, to be flawed. So Krishna here says, to follow your own dharma, that is to say that thing which for which you actually have the adhikar, that is always better than to try to follow anyone else's path, even if it looks good in the beginning. And he says that twice. He says it early on in the Bhagavad Gita, and he also says it in summary at the end in chapter 18. Very, very important point. And why is it important? Because I've already mentioned, Baladeva Vidyabhushan tells us the way that he defines purification of the existence is swashrama dharmanushthanena mano nirmalyam. To be of purified consciousness, to be of happy consciousness, as a result of being situated in your dharma. If we are not situated in our varna properly, if we're not situated in the proper ashram, you cannot make advancement. That is the access to stability in Krishna consciousness. If we find that people are having problems, as Srila Prabhupada found that his disciples were having problems in the late 1970s, then this is the solution, according to the Shastra. Yes, Shastra vitim utsrijya vartate kama karata nasasiddhim avapnoti. And you'll not get perfection, you'll not be happy, and you'll not go back to Godhead if you ignore this. Varnashrama charavata purushina parapuman ityadi nanyata toshakaranam. There's no other way for ordinary people to please the Lord. In Vishnu Purana book 6, Sagar Maharaj approached Audhava Muni and asked him a very intelligent question, a very relevant question for everyone in this room. He said, how can an ordinary person take to pure devotional service? His concern is not karmakandya. His concern is devotional service. And by way of answering that question in a very, very long way that spans several chapters, this verse appears, which Prabhupada quotes throughout his books. One has to be situated in Varnashram Dharma, and for an ordinary person at least, there's no other way to please the Lord, because there's no other way for that person to come to a stage of Sattva Samshuti, purified consciousness, wherein one can sustain a mature commitment to pure devotional service. Do we hear this in Bhagavad Gita chapter 7? Yesham tvantagatam papam jananam punya karmanam te dvandvamoha nirmukta. Those persons, Krishna says, become freed from the duality of illusion. Who? They are fixed in dharma and they are freed from the reactions of their past sins. They can sustain pure devotional service. It doesn't generally happen. Therefore, although the Varnashram thing is considered to be extrinsic to Krishna consciousness, if one's founder or acharya has ordered it, it is no longer extrinsic to Krishna consciousness. Because the order of the spiritual master is the active principle of spiritual life. It's absolutely central to Krishna consciousness. And, I mean, aside from that, if we read Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we can find Sanatana Goswami confirm that the culture of the spiritual world, the substrate, the cultural substrate of the spiritual world is a Varnashram culture, Daivi Varnashram. There's a big difference between Daivi Varnashram Dharma and ordinary Varnashram Dharma, which many people do not understand. And that needs to be emphasized. But that's the subject of another lecture, so I should stop here. Any other questions, comments? No. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.